Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, when is the last time you worried about bedbugs?
Not in a while.
Okay, well, it's probably because you're not in Paris. Apparently, there is a widespread bedbug outbreak that has taken over Paris during Fashion Week. Derelict.
It's a giant yikes.
Oh, God. And okay, so there's a Time magazine story about the infestation, and I have never seen a bedbug like close up. I don't like it. I gotta say, I'm against it.
Against the bedbugs. Sorry I'm to discriminate, it. But no thank you.
Yeah, I know. It's controversial, but I don't like them. I don't think bedbugs are good. And it is kind of gross that there was an outbreak in Fashion Week, but I guess the lesson to be learned from this is that bedbugs don't see class. they don't see privilege.
Equal opportunity.
They don't care if you're having a big fancy party for clothes that make women feel bad about themselves. They don't care. And I appreciate that about them.
Thanks, bedbugs, for sponsoring this show.
Listen, it's a fun show today.
It is a vibe.
A vibe. A lot of news. A lot of news to talk about. We had the first partner of California, Jen Siebel Newsom, join us.
Delightful.
So generous with her time. Mm-hmm. So passionate about things that matter to most of our listeners and that matter to us. And honestly, the state of California is lucky to have her. We also have a special guest to join us for news.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, all the way from Washington, D.C.
Shaniqua McClendon, Crooked's VP of Politics, is here to break down the Kevin McCarthy news, banned books week, a preview of the Supreme Court term. Mm-hmm. Looks kind of talk about spooky season.
Fuckery laden.
Fuckery abounds. But we are going to tackle all of it with hopefully some lightheartedness, some jokes. And then we get to Sandy Petty. Real fun episode.
Good times.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who would love to read Melania Trump's ever-evolving prenup. Alyssa, if you found and fetched that for me, it would be the greatest present of all time.
You know what? Let me get into that. You know I love finding things, Erin. I love finding things.
That is my my Roman Empire. What's going on with that lady? What's she doing?
It's got to be. I mean, she's still there, right?
Yes. I want, like, what's in the, yeah, I'm so curious. It's such a mess, and it's none of my business, and it makes me seem
isn't
like.
Isn't it our business, though? I feel like it's our business at this point. I mean.
It's an ugly part of me that wants to know about this. Like, I'm not proud of the part of me that's like, yeah, I want to see this. Like, it's an ugly part of me, but I'm owning it. I want to see it. I'm sorry. I can't. She lives inside of me, this ugly person. And I can't get her out. She won't leave. She's got squatters, right? Okay, joining us today for news, we've got a special treat, Crooked's VP of Politics, Shaniqua McClendon. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
She's here in studio with me.
Yeah, I'm in LA.
You're in studio. It's so nice.
I know. I actually haven't seen the new studio, so when I walked in on whatever last week, I was like, this is really nice.
It is. It's very nice. It's spacious. There is a chaotic... Yeah. Mural on one side of the wall, just to give everybody a picture. There's various objects, some of which make sense and others of which don't.
Lips. Is that a Nokia?
An America phone. There's all kinds of things in here. I am really excited. We'd been planning on having Shaniqua on the show because she was going to be in town. And it just so happened that the day before Shaniqua was going to be on the show, we had yet another unprecedented thing happen in the federal government, and that was Kevin McCarthy being ousted as Speaker of the House for the first time in history. Merch idea. Baby onesies that say unprecedented on them.
And when's the last time, like, you know, a white guy made history as the first to do something?
I think Kevin McCarthy is, I mean, it couldn't have happened to a wormier, more weaselly guy. The schadenfreude is incredibly strong with this. Basically, for those who haven't been following along, and why would you? Because this can be tedious if you don't kind of feed on DC misery. But Kevin McCarthy was ousted on Tuesday from his position after Representative Matt Gaetz, a Floridian sex pest, campaigned against him in the most annoying way possible. But Matt Gaetz, you know, it's like a broken clock kind of situation mm-hmm. because Kevin McCarthy is so repugnant that you're sort of like the enemy of my enemy.
I know. It's like my hands under the table, like, yes.
Yes. Go, Matt Gaetz. Oh, I feel so gross saying that. And right before Kevin McCarthy lost his job, the government had almost run out of money and shut down. So the reason that Gaetz tried to oust McCarthy was because McCarthy committed the cardinal sin of working with Democrats in any way. And when they passed a continuing resolution in the wee hours of Sunday, mm-hmm. It only keeps the government open for another 45 days. So in mid-November, we're going to be dealing with this shit again, and we might not even have a speaker by then. Shaniqua, what do you make of this giant mess?
I'm not going to lie. I know that, like, our democracy and the country and all of those things are in the crosshairs of this, but it's been very entertaining to watch. When Kevin McCarthy took forever to actually be elected speaker, all I kept thinking about was John Boehner and Paul Ryan and how you had, I mean, they have a pretty strong track record. This is the third Republican speaker that the Freedom Caucus has pretty much gotten rid of. But I don't know. He brought this on himself. He mm-hmm. agreed to a bunch of ridiculous terms. And I mean, I don't know if I thought he would make it 9 months or not, but it's just really interesting that the one time he decided to be responsible and keep the government open, now he's not speaker anymore. and he's not running. I thought he would kind of keep fighting, but he's washed his hands. And now we're just going to watch this theater play out for I don't know how long.
Yeah. And what I found really interesting yesterday, entertaining, was that the Democrats had a chance to mm-hmm. save him. Democrats could have broken ranks, and all it would have taken is a few to just be like, no, he worked with us. We're going to keep him. And they just all kind of sat there and crossed their arms and, like, let them fight.
Yeah.
They just, like, popped popcorn, watched the proceedings. Alyssa, after McCarthy was ousted, he gave a speech that you actually were kind of moved by. Can you tell me a little bit about—
Way to tee me up, you asshole. I'm not going to lie. I watched his press conference. I watched him answer all the questions, and I was flummoxed. I'm like, where's this person been this whole time?
Exactly.
It's like, it is, I thought that it was, that Kevin McCarthy joins the ranks of, you know, John McCain, Hillary Clinton, Al Gore, of people who all gave the best speeches once they had been liberated from political life in some ways. It was like, Hillary never gave a better speech than when she conceded than her concession speech to Trump. And when she gave that speech, you were like, fuck, I wish she'd been doing this the whole time. But mm-hmm. he, let me tell you, he was talking about Nazis. He was talking about Hungary. I was like, oh my God, Kevin took us on a journey last night. But like, I feel like, you know, I think he will be interesting. Like, will he leave? Will he resign his seat? Or will he become a fly in the ointment of the eight people? Like there is no greater fundraising machine, really, than McCarthy, other, I guess, than mm-hmm. maybe Trump. But, like, nobody really knows how much money he raises or, like, what's legal, so it's fine. But, like, I don't know. What's he going to use that power for? Who's he going to fuck with? I mean, I feel like he is a petty bitch. I mean, he has mm-hmm. proved that his whole life, that he is nothing if not petty. So we'll see. We'll see what he brings to bear over the next couple of weeks.
I think he should get on a plane right now. The closest, most direct flight he can possibly take.
And open up a new sandwich shop?
He's got to go to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And he's got to get in one of those secret Republican buses and take it up of the evil Cheney mountain and crawl on his knees groveling before Liz Cheney.
Oh, because he fucked her
yep.
over.
He fucked her over. Did. Everybody who could have come to his rescue, he fucked over. The only person he hadn't fucked over who could have come to his rescue was Donald Trump.
Right.
Kevin McCarthy was one of the greatest enablers mm-hmm. of Donald Trump during his presidency.
Yeah.
He completely sucked up to him. Shaniqua, you didn't expect Trump to do anything.
No. I mean, look at January. Kevin McCarthy, it's like a, you know, toxic relationship that he has with Trump, where Trump holds all the power. And the one time McCarthy looked like he might stand up after January 6th, He didn't. He said, oh, I didn't say those things that he was captured on tape saying.
On the floor exactly. of the house.
Yeah, yeah. And so he, I guess he likes the abuse. I hate to blame victims, but, you know, he's done a lot of stuff that is just, I don't know, it's really hard to feel sorry for him because he's just been so power hungry and then he got it and couldn't keep it.
Yeah, and a report from the Washington Post on Wednesday. As Kevin McCarthy battled this week to keep the job he would eventually lose, one very powerful ally did not come to his rescue, mm-hmm. Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And it is a reported piece in the Post about how Trump just sort of was like, "Yeah, I don't know.
But he doesn't like him." I mean, McCarthy knows that, right? Like, Trump doesn't like him. And he's probably just going to keep talking crap about him. And I don't know. It's really sad.
And you do have to love, though, that everyone's on the floor yesterday afternoon shouting on behalf of Kevin McCarthy, Jim mm-hmm. Jordan. They're all there. And now, literally 2 minutes after his press conference ended, they're like, so I'm throwing my hat in the ring.
Yep.
Just want to put that out there. Jim Jordan, Steve Scalise. By the way, did not know Steve Scalise had cancer. Until they were like, yeah, he
yeah,
might not
he maybe
run.
Shouldn't be running for speaker if he's in.
Has he not seen what he'd be facing? It's
I
like,
know.
Dude,
who wants
center
it?
Yourself. Put your health first. Yeah.
A little self-care, you know.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like if Kevin McCarthy had a biography come out, the title should be, and for what?
Yeah.
And for what?
It's perfect.
He completely sold every piece of his soul in the pursuit of this job, Speaker of the House. He was so thirsty for it. He just bled with desperation. Every step of his political career was aimed at getting this. Mm-hmm. And along the way, he just let pieces slide. He gave things up. He let pieces slide. He embarrassed himself. Mm-hmm. He aligned himself with Donald Trump, who has no track record whatsoever of standing with anybody.
Loyalty, ever.
Not even his wife.
Or vice president.
Yeah, right. I think Ivanka is the only person he's ever been loyal to, and that's very creepy. So he's Kevin McCarthy gave everything up. Mm-hmm. And now what does he have? He has an incredibly unsuccessful, like kind of floppy 9 month speakership with mm-hmm. zero major accomplishments. He did, like Shaniqua said, make history as the first Speaker of the House to be ousted. It was like, and now what's he going to do?
I mean, I don't even think he can be a lobbyist because who's he going to go lobby that's actually going to listen to him now?
He can like slink
back
to Bakersfield,
run for mayor.
Well, I mean,
like 200 members of Congress. Like, that's the thing. It was these eight maniacs that ousted him. It's pretty incredible when you think about it. Like, who would want to be speaker? These eight people or six people, as it ended up being, are never going to do anything different.
No.
Like, unless mm-hmm. you make Matt Gaetz the speaker. Also, Aaron, you know, based on everything we have learned about McCarthy in the last few months, you know that the title of his book will be Speaker.
I appreciate it. Nancy Pelosi sent a tweet yesterday or on Tuesday that had included the phrase, the House will be in order.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, Nancy, that's so
mean. And then
so
they kicked her out of her office.
I was like, that's so cold, Nancy. But yeah.
I mean, this never happened when she was speaker.
No. And that's the thing. Like, I don't, like, Alyssa, you were telling me yesterday over text that McCarthy doesn't seem like an idiot. He seems like he doesn't have a soul, but he doesn't seem like an idiot.
But he's not dumb.
Yeah. There are plenty of people who don't have souls who are very smart.
Though I will say this. I have never seen McCarthy seem less dumb than yesterday. You know what I mean? I'm like, where mm-hmm. was this level of like there were definitely moments mm-hmm. and it's like, I am a partisan person, but I can also be fair. Like, if I think someone, mm-hmm. I don't agree with them, that's fine. They can still be smart. I had no idea Kevin had that much to share, like, ever. He's just capitulated and cowered in the face of these lunatics for so long that it's like, I mean, I hope he lets his freak flag fly now. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it seemed like he finally, like, had a spine. And, I mean, the problem is his stupidity in the beginning of this is what got him here. And now he's, you know, he did the right thing. He kept the government open, but that's what happens. I mean, people say this all the time. You know, play stupid games, you win stupid prizes.
Yeah, and now, you know, we're in an unprecedented territory where we don't really have a Speaker of the House. We have a Speaker pro tem who's named Patrick McHenry from North Carolina.
Whose, like, only power, by the way, is convening the leadership race.
Yeah.
So, like, as Americans, we should be concerned. But wait, I have one more petty thing that I just can't listen to anymore. All the Democrats getting on TV being like, the answer is so simple. The Republicans just need to vote for Jeffries for Speaker. Who is spending their good time and energy putting that talking point in the DSCC or the DCCC memo? Like, I was like, okay, you're getting muted now, too. That's some of the dumbest shit I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's a silly point. But, you know, the Speaker doesn't have to be a member of the House of Representatives.
Oh, which is crazy. We've learned that.
Just pick somebody with a high Q score. You know, like a celebrity that's kind of beloved, like the
Arnold
Rock.
Schwarzenegger.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, Speaker.
Come on.
I would watch more congressional.
Oh,
here,
yeah.
Because he's very compelling.
I'm here to pump you up.
All right, we have to take a break, but when we come back, this week's interview. And welcome back. You are listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who want to ski and surf in the same day. Jealous, Alyssa, over there in New York?
Erin, I have leaves, okay? My foliage is thriving, so
we've got leaves,
don't
too,
get sassy.
And they're all the same color, and they've fallen on the ground already. But you know what?
Because they're dead. They didn't
skiing
change.
Skiing and surfing
died.
In the same... California is America's best state, and I'm not just saying that because I live here. I'm sorry. It is. It's America's
fine.
Best state.
It's fine.
It's the
greatest state. I'm telling New Mexico and Michigan that you have turned on them. So go ahead.
I haven't turned on New Mexico and Michigan. I just think that they're not as good as California.
All right.
That's all. Okay. Speaking of California, our guest today is the first partner of California. She's founded two organizations, Misrepresentation, which creates media about intersectional gender justice, and California Partners Project, which fights for gender equality and child well-being. She's a documentarian and a mom, and of course, she's married to a guy called Governor Gavin Newsom. Heard of him. It's Jennifer Siebel Newsom. Welcome to Hysteria.
Thanks for having me. So, and I love that you love California.
I do. I'm a transplant. I'm from the Midwest. I tried out New York, love New York, came out here, and now I'm like, I'm in it. I'm in. So what is it like being first partner and working with your husband on political goals?
I mean, it's great. It's fun. It's, you know, partnership makes the world go round. And so I've been able through this role to basically carry the work that I've always cared about, that I've always done, which is champion women and champion children and make sure that children get the best start in life. And so that's why we launched California for All Women and California for All Children.
That's amazing. So obviously you and your husband are both your own people, so you probably agree on a lot of things, but not everything. If you disagree with your husband on a decision he makes as governor, do you talk to him about it or do you just kind of let it slide?
If I disagree, I kick him out of the room. No, I'm kidding. we totally, you know, have to give each other our unique perspectives, right? We're both individuals. We have had different life experiences. I've lived and worked and focused on women and children my entire life. I've lived all over the world. He's a complete policy wonk. He knows so much more than me in certain realms. I went to Stanford Business School. I grew up in a conservative household. So we're constantly having dialogue, and it's rich dialogue and it's rich education. But, you know, I completely respect and trust him. I will push him. But I also, you know, will respect his final decision. And honestly, we're so aligned. It's awesome. And I learned a lot from him because I'm not a political junkie. I don't come from this realm. I haven't studied and spent time in office. And so I obviously, he is the governor. The people elected him. I'm there to support. I'm there to partner. And I'm there to show Californians that we're committed to partnering with them. And in particular, I'm really focused on centering women and girls through California for All Women. And then again, on making sure that kids in California get the best start in life.
Mm-hmm. And on you've worked so extensively in the areas that you've worked. Have you ever had a moment where you're like, oh, I taught my husband something about that he didn't know before, and this helped inform his decision-making process?
Well, I definitely know that my films have influenced his thinking. If you've heard him talk about toxic masculinities and the whole paradigm of power, control, and aggression, he got that from my documentary, The Mask You Live In, with misrepresentation. You know, you can't unsee what you've seen. And so he's completely become educated as a feminist. And then I would, you know, most recently, my documentary, Fair Play, was all about all of the invisible work that women have shouldered and the benefits to men and leaning into more care at home. So I think I have a lot more respect in the household right now of having made that documentary and demonstrated to him how the benefits to him doing more at home, to partnering more at home, again, not just for him personally, you know, men who step into more care at home, they're healthier, they're happier, they have better sex lives, greater longevity. But to the children themselves, they have better cognitive development, behavior, and long-term healthier relationships. So again, he's a sponge and he learns from everything around him. And I think he's picked up a lot from my documentaries.
You have been so vulnerable as a public figure. You opened up during the Harvey Weinstein trial and also about the death of your sister. At the time of the Weinstein trial, you said you were shocked by the level of misogyny that still exists. What exactly shocked you the most, and do you think it's gotten any better?
So I was shocked by the level of misogyny that's the loud and perpetuated, not just in the courtroom by the defense attorneys, but also by that's permissible, that judges don't say, hey, that's a rape myth. We don't like, are you, this is the 21st century. Are you not educated and informed? But also that's, in the, you know, population. I mean, I think, you know, in some ways when I made Misrepresentation and it premiered in 2011 at the Sundance Film Festival, Oprah bought it. It kind of literally made its tour around the world, you know, to standing room only audiences, packed crowds, the whole thing. I felt like we were making change. And, you know, for all of the hard work of the women before me, I felt like, okay, progress is happening. And then, you know, we had the advent of social media and the personal iPhone, and we started to see this backlash against women's progress. We saw it with the 2016 election. We saw it with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And so, but I still am an eternal optimist. You have to be to a certain extent. And so, yes, I was shocked by the belief systems and the patterns that people still believe in rape myths, that they still don't believe women. I come from a place of believing women, of trusting women, of valuing women, of wanting to center women and the feminine experience. Of course, you can't, you know, that's a generalization and we're not all the same. We don't all share the same values. But I definitely recognize how much work we have to do. And really my documentaries, Misrepresentation, The Mask You Live In, The Great American Lie, Fair Play, are all about chipping away at the patriarchy through really outing and questioning harmful gender stereotypes and norms, and challenging all of us to partner to overcome them and to create a better future for everyone. And I guess, I was hoping when I formed the Representation Project after the premiere of Misrepresentation, I was hoping we wouldn't still have to be in existence, 12, 13 years later, and here we are still at it. So, you know, I know cultural change takes time. In some cases it might be a 20 year plus process. And so I'm in it for the long haul. And that's why I'm so grateful for the opportunity to use my voice and platform to speak truth to power, to challenge the status quo, and really to harness sort of the collective understanding that we all have to recognize women's plight, especially marginalized women, vulnerable women, women of color, in addition to LGBT plus Q community, immigrant women, et cetera. And that as long as we can lift all of these communities up, and when we lift all of these communities up and we partner together, we will actually achieve equality once and for all.
Mm-hmm. So fall is here. And as you know, school has started. You've got kids. You know all about it. Your office does a lot of work to help California kids. Can you tell us a bit more about what you're working on now that kids are back in school?
Yes. So from the get-go, we were committed to making sure that we, again, give children the best start in life and center their well-being. And that starts with access to the outdoors. And so we launched a parks initiative with library parks passes where you can go and have access, free access to your state parks. Just like you have at the national level with the fourth grade pass, we also have an adventure fourth grade pass, but also, just again, to ensure that California kids take advantage and their families take advantage of the fact that these are actually their parks. Not everybody lives near a park, and I'm a big proponent of time in nature and being together in community and exercising in nature. We also championed farm to school. So we started the groundwork so that when the governor signed legislation for universal meals, we could guarantee and continue to work towards improving and ensuring that those two free meals a day in schools are nutritious, delicious, and locally sourced, and ideally on the scale of organic to regenerative ag. So our farm to school initiative, again, an incredible partnership with farmers, culinary experts, folks in sort of the food systems arena, educators, has really been transformative, and it's been a role model and really guide for the nation. And then lastly, huge focus, obviously, on literature and reading. And I have a whole partnership with California State Libraries. And all of this is an antidote to the big thing that I just wanted to share, which is around mental health. We recognize that mental health in America was going on a sort of downward trajectory prior to the pandemic. It didn't help with children spending so much time online and being exposed to these digital devices in space. But it just all kind of coincides with the iPhone and the rise of the super computer tablet in your hand 24/7 and social media. And so I'm as a mother of four young children, I'm a big proponent and advocate of making sure that kids have antidotes to time online and that parents have the support they need, so that those are just tools to connect children in positive ways and so that we can use tech for good, but limit all the negatives, which are quite expansive right now.
Mm-hmm. And on the COVID note, the impact of those school years on kids is still being felt like across the country. There's more chronic absenteeism than before the pandemic. There's failing test scores across the U.S. What can we learn from the current crisis in education nationally, and how is California working to overcome those issues in addition to what you already mentioned?
Well, I'm super proud of what we're doing in California. I think probably many states recognize, as we did, how broken our healthcare system was when the pandemic happened. And given the fact in California, for example, that both healthcare and education are locally controlled, there's a lot of creativity that needed to happen to basically ensure that everyone was sort of moving in the same direction of centering the child and their health and well-being. And so I'm really proud of all of our investments in the community school model, just as I'm super proud of the state's investments of $4.7 billion in revamping the whole youth behavioral health initiative and making sure that children get the support they need where they're predominantly at, which is at school. So we have this whole campaign and investment to grow the numbers of folks in healthcare, but also with education that is centered around understanding that mental health and physical health are inextricably linked, but that as a society, we all have mental health, right? And not all of us have extremes of mental health. A lot of us just have butterflies in our stomach. A lot of us just have we're anxious because we have a test or there's stuff going on at home or there's a big life-changing event. And so really helping kids to name what they're feeling, but also what's going on, and that a lot of it's normal, a lot of it's part of being human, and a lot of it's just a result of living in these fast-paced lives with technology that's coming at you 24/7, communicating to you where people have access to you. And that's a real, you know, we're all kind of living in our limbic system and fight or fight, but with a lot of more stress than previous generations. And so a lot of that is what we have to address. And I think we're starting to invest in some really creative ways to look at the impact of technology on our youth, hold tech accountable, and really try to steer them to be this force for good of connecting youth that need that sisterhood, that partnership, that mentorship. Because again, it's steeped in so much ugliness and divisiveness and separation, rather than sort of a connection, which is really what it should be all about.
Mm-hmm. So I read in an interview that you did a couple months ago that in your office, you have a whiteboard, and on the whiteboard, it says gender equity and it says support for survivors. And you mentioned before the California for All Women program that you have. Can you tell listeners a little bit more about that and, you know, perhaps how it differs from a group like Moms for Liberty, for example?
Well, our gender equity focus through the First Partners Office and California for All Women has a few pillars. One is pay equity, because we all know that women are not paid equitably in our country. California actually has some of the strongest pay laws in the nation and has a relatively smaller pay gap, but we still have a pay gap that's larger for Black women and Brown women, and also larger for mothers and LGBTQ plus women. So we have work to do, and it's why I launched California Equal Pay Pledge when we first came into office. The pay gap obviously has historically contributed to the wealth gap for women. California women lose $87 billion a year to the wealth gap or the pay gap, and it creates a wealth gap or furthers the wealth gap. And so we have a lot of work to do. Over 147 companies, including organizations and entities like California state government, have signed the Equal Pay Pledge. So we are making progress. Another one of our top initiatives that we partnered with California Partners Project on is ensuring that SB 826, which was legislation to guarantee more diverse women seats on public company boards, that law was successful. In 2018, there were 15.5% women on public company board seats. Today, the number is 33%. It's kind of stalled as a result of some legal conundrums and questions regarding its legality. We've appealed. We'll see where things lie. But I think that we have made the case that there are so many benefits to having diverse women seated around public company tables. The third issue that we've been championing is family-friendly workplace policies. The governor's, you know, championed everything from childcare paternally family leave, paid family leave, and that feels really good. We still, you know, could try to do more, but the federal government kind of has to jump in here and help us out. Separately, reproductive rights and maternal health are big issues that we're championing. Black women in particular still. And Black and Brown children are still more likely to die at birth and have complications than white children, even in California, even though we're doing better than most states. So that's one of our focuses. And then reproductive rights, California is trying to lead. We've set up this 22-state alliance. I'm super proud of that. When it comes to violence against women, there is a lot that we need to do. I've had conversations with different folks. I have a group committed to kind of examining this, just as we're separately really examining sex trafficking in the state. I'm not at all pleased with what's happening in our state with regards to sex trafficking and the fact that it's so blatantly in our face. And so we have a lot of and gangs and perpetrators and pimps and johns are all getting away with it. And so again, this is a travesty that's affecting a lot of border states and states with like California, with a huge immigrant population and just the vast size of entry into California and our ports and what have you. So we have work to do there. And I'm really excited because I'm diving into it in partnership with folks from Karen Bass to advocates like Mira Sorvino. And it feels really good to be focused on providing any strategic support to not just have these splatterings of legislation here and there, whether it's violence against women or sex trafficking, which is another form of violence against women, but really to have like a cohesive policy package that when we leave office, we know will center and ensure that women are in a better place in California.
All right. Are there any young women in politics right now who make you particularly excited or hopeful for the future?
Oh my gosh. I just spoke at an Emily's List event the other day, and it was so inspiring. And I won't name names because there's so many incredible women coming up in the ranks. And then I'm ecstatic that we have LaFonza Butler as our first LGBTQ plus Black woman in leadership, because she's a rock star. She is the best and brightest and will just do a phenomenal job for California. And I'm just so proud of her and her connection to women in leadership. And I will say, I started making my documentary Misrepresentation the other week. I've started shooting. I've been working on it for a while. And oh my goodness, these young women that I'm spending time with and interviewing, they are so inspiring. So but again, it doesn't have to be all young women. There are some incredible older women out there who I have such respect and admiration for. The future is bright. And I'm just, you know, I feel like we're really blessed in California and beyond, and really looking forward to a bright future for women in America.
Well, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a great conversation, and I'm personally very happy that we have somebody like you as close to the leadership in the state as we do.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to both of you.
Take care.
Thanks, Erin.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alyssa.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more news.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across six southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold, and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th. Watch Long Play Series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, moving on to something that is bad for America, but not funny. So summer was the season of exposing ethics violations in the Supreme Court. Wow, Clarence Thomas, you are a busy, busy boy. Now fall is here. The justices' summer break is over, and it's time for them to make some decisions. On the docket for this session, we've got the abortion pill, gun regulations, voting rights, social media cases, and more. The gun regulations one is particularly scary because it's like, should domestic abusers be allowed to have guns?
Why is that a question that needs, you know, debate?
That needs Supreme Court. Jesus Christ. Use the sense God gave you.
A group of people who demanded protection after they overturned Roe v. Wade because they were so afraid of what people might do to them. And we're just going to say, oh, people we know to be violent and abusers, let's debate if they should have guns or not.
Guns. I'm aghast, but you know, there's been a history on the Supreme Court of just completely blowing up gun regulations, and I'm not very optimistic. There's also that ridiculous abortion pill ban That was court shopped down in Texas and made its way to the Fifth Circuit, which is essentially
the
in the
Fifth
tank
Circuit is exhausting.
I know.
In the tank. Let's get rid of it. Let's have one fewer.
Pretty much.
You get fired.
Get that Kazmarek out of Amarillo. I swear to God.
Yeah, if I had a nickel for every time I heard that sentence, Alyssa.
I know, especially on this podcast.
And then there's also a really troubling case. We talked about this maybe a year ago, a year and a half ago. We saw that people who were disability advocates were kind of sounding the alarm that this court might make moves to chip away at the Americans with Disabilities Act. Mm-hmm. The ADA, which was a law that was passed in the early 90s, signed into law by the first George Bush. And it really provides a ton of protection for Americans with disabilities. And one of the primary mechanizations of the way that it's enforced is people file lawsuits against businesses that are not in compliance. Mm-hmm. So like if you're, you know, and you don't have to have visited the business. You can just be a person in a wheelchair and you're like, that place doesn't have a ramp. I can't get in. You can file a lawsuit. Or you can like get a phone call that's like, this place doesn't have a wheelchair. You can file a lawsuit. There is a company that is suing over whether or not that's allowed. Now, look, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a Supreme Court. I got talked out of that. But there's something to me. It's like the Supreme Court this last session allowed somebody who hadn't even been asked. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, like,
sorry,
No. Shaniqua, you go ahead. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, this is about the woman who sued to not have to make websites for gay couples, right? Or wedding websites. And no one had ever asked her
Nobody
to do
had
it.
Even asked her.
And
nope.
They made a decision based off of it. And so if she can do that and have a whole Supreme Court case that affects the entire country, this is the same thing to me.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was my first thought. I was
where's the consistency?
Yeah.
Because it's not about that. They are trying to shape our country into something else. And I think, you know, ableism feels like a form of bigotry that, like, we're still kind of okay with. It's not as unacceptable as other ones. And in large part because companies get to say it's too much of a burden. It's going to cost us too much. But everyone should be able to access society and life in the same ways. And I don't know. I think as a society, we need to kind of shift and be more protective of people with disabilities and ensuring that they have access in the same ways. But it just feels like there's just – it's okay to say it cost us too much money.
I mean, but the ADA is pretty tough, like compared to other laws protecting people against discrimination. Alyssa, you're nodding.
No, I was just going to say the one thing that I really appreciated earlier this week was that the Biden administration was low-key trolling the fact that this case was coming up by hosting a celebration of the Americans with Disability Act and the Rehabilitation Act. And I noticed it because it was on Selma Blair's Instagram as someone who has suffered with MS for many years now. And I was like, good for them. Like, people have to remember, like, the ADA feels like something that is so utterly ingrained that it's like one of these things we think has been handled, and it's not. And also, in reading through this case, I didn't totally understand the idea of a civil rights tester, which is what the woman was in this case. A civil rights tester is someone who works to uncover discrimination for the sole purpose of uncovering it, not because they have experienced it in the normal course of their everyday life. So I thought I learned something new today, Erin. I did not know what that was, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say one thing that the people that are suing over the enforcement of the ADA are complaining that in a lot of cases, if you're a tester who sues over the ADA, you usually don't get like money.
Right.
You just make force the business into compliance and they pay your lawyer's fees.
Right.
And so there have been lawyers representing testers for ADA who have inflated their fees to extract money. So the people, the only people that are making money from this are the lawyers. And that feels like, I mean, maybe
I don't think that's okay.
I don't think that's great.
Like, maybe they should get their time and their fees compensated, but let's not get rich off this, all right? Like,
yeah.
Of course. Yeah. and this also could have implications for other civil rights issues. So if the Supreme Court were to roll back the ADA, it would be detrimental to the ability to seek legal remedy for discrimination sought elsewhere. And it's really, it really makes me nervous because, okay, this is not the same thing, but you know, there are certain people, I think, in the U.S. that are not considered by the general population as having a right to be a part of society.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think for one of those groups is children. People mm-hmm. are really hostile to, like, children being part of society, mm-hmm. children being incorporated into society, people with disabilities, the elderly. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this weird, I don't know, maybe I'm just picking up on some vibes, but there's this feeling where people who are not in those groups or directly affected by a member of those groups or taking care of somebody in those mm-hmm. groups, people think that they are entitled to a society where they don't have to encounter those people at all.
Yeah.
And the ADA makes it so that disabled people can, like, exercise their right to yeah. exist in society. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And enjoy it.
And enjoy it, yes, exactly. Just to go to a restaurant, to right. go to a hotel, to, like, even, you know, amusement parks. There's some mm-hmm. rides that are ADA accessible, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. it just is, it's really disturbing. I feel like the Supreme Court it's an arm of the U.S. government that doesn't aim in any way to make Americans' lives better.
No.
No.
You know, not to bring up Beyonce, I'm always doing that, but I don't know if y'all saw the video going around of a fan who was trying to fly to Seattle. He's in a wheelchair, and the airline basically said, we can't accommodate your wheelchair on this plane. And so he did not make it to Seattle to see the show. Ultimately, Beyonce's team got him to a show, so he was able to see one, but it just kind of felt like, oh, you don't get to enjoy this thing because you know, you're in a wheelchair and you can't walk onto this plane and just sit down.
That's
and
bullshit. Like, I did not see that. That's bullshit.
Yeah, you know, and so I agree. It just feels like there's not concern. I think it's actually more of what you said, less of not just concern, but people don't want to have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. But we're a collective society and we should. And I think something people should definitely remember, not be so short-sighted. If COVID has taught us anything, none of us is that far away from being, you know, mm-hmm. disabled in some way. And so wouldn't you want those protections if you were in that position? And even if you're not, you should just want that for people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good
question. Yeah, you're right. COVID was like a mass disabling event, too. Mm-hmm. There are people, we still don't know who yeah. all is impacted by long COVID, who can't go upstairs like they yep. used to, who can't do things they used to. I mean, it's a bad look. Mm-hmm. And I hope that the Supreme Court chooses to reinforce the ADA rather than strip it. But yeah. I'm not optimistic literally about anything. Mm-hmm. There's also a case, we'll get more into this on a future show, but there's another case about whether public school children have a right mm-hmm. to choose names and pronouns affirming their gender identity or whether parents get to manage that. Mm-hmm. I personally don't believe that children are property. That's right. Just, mm-hmm. I don't know.
They also didn't ask to be here.
They didn't yeah. ask to be. Your job as a parent is to, like, keep them safe. Mm-hmm. Your job as a parent is not to control them and teach them, like, ugh. Anyway, we'll get into that more. But basically, this is a law that deliberately targets and victimizes trans kids mm-hmm. across the country. And it is, look, if you do this to your kid, if you're a parent and you do this to your kid, they're not going to want to hang. They're not going to want anything to do with you when right. they reach adulthood. So what's your end game? Why
yeah.
do it?
Yeah. It feels like they want to codify bad parenting into law. It's just like, why are you being this way? And I imagine these are the same people who, when they're older and their kids do not want to help, you know, care for them, they're wondering why. Or even more concerning, you see, you know, suicide rates or depression and anxiety rates amongst children and teens in the LGBTQ community. And I'm not a parent, but, you know, I have a nephew and there are the children in my life. And I just can't imagine saying, no, you can't be who you are. I'm going to make your life harder. Like, the world is cruel enough. To have to come home to that just seems really, really like a bad parent. I really don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's they should call this, like, you know, any law that requires schools to follow the parents' directives on pronouns and names versus the children themselves.
Yeah.
It's like the, you know, I got spanked as a kid and I turned out yeah. fine kind yeah. of ethos. And it's like, you didn't actually.
No.
You turned out really
you're actually not okay.
bad, Cheryl. You're not doing okay. That's why you're in a fight at the Applebee's. Like, you should not perpetuate whatever yeah. made you.
And it's what you just said about not, like, as if children don't have agency and rights over how they feel and move through the world. I mean, just because you're young does not mean you don't know who you are.
Right. And it's I think it's one thing to be like, look, you can't get a tattoo and smoke pot until you're 18. Or you shouldn't actually until your frontal lobe closes at 25 because it's just bad for your brain. But I can't stop you once you turn 18. I'm not going to facilitate it before then. That's one thing. That's keeping a kid
safe.
Yeah. But like making their identity not feel safe to them in their home is like the opposite of that. I don't get it. I don't get it. And I sometimes don't feel like a person. And I would like to travel to Mars and form a colony. And you're all invited. You are all invited. We're also going to get more into laws that are targeting abortion still. But we're going to just completely burn through our news time. Alyssa, you've got something that's a little bit more, it's like bad for America, but upbeat.
What are they doing, Erin? Why do they want to ban books? What is it about books that terrifies people so much? They're literally these people, Moms of Liberty, going up against the American Library Association. Who wants to fuck with librarians?
What is wrong with you if you're fucking with a librarian?
If that's your enemy, you have problems.
Yeah, you're the bad guy.
I love that the name of this year's theme for the American Library Association is Let Freedom Read. It's like, take that, you freedom eagle on the back of your car, people. Like, we're taking freedom back and people should be able to read. The one thing that I thought was so interesting when we were looking through this article, one, these people who want to ban all the books of all the books that have been banned and challenged over the past year, the LGBTQIA plus content is listed as a reason for 7 of the challenges. What's that mean? It could just mean that a character is gay. What? That is the entire, that's it. That's all you have to do is be like, I don't like that there is a gay character in this book. And also these nuts have tried to equate LGBTQ representation to pornography.
It doesn't make sense.
We've got a whole character in Christian mythology that has her sexual status as part of her name. Virgin Mary. Like, that's way more pornographic than like two adult men holding hands and taking their child to a parent-teacher conference in a book for children.
Yeah. Something I think about is all of the fairy tales and things that I heard as a child. And I mean, I think that has been a lot more detrimental to society than children being exposed to gay couples, because how many young women or, you know, people, millennials now are like, oh, you know, guys are supposed to be awful when they like you. Like, it's all of these things that we've kind of incorporated into how we move through the world and live life, and they're awful. And they come from a lot of media. They come from books. They come from the stories that we were told. There's this account I follow on Instagram. It's like a, you know, help women get out of toxic relationships and stuff. But she's posted a few animated graphics, and it's a therapist sitting with the different Disney princesses, and one is like Cinderella, and she's like, so you dance with a guy for one night and now you think he's the love of your life and you want to be with him forever, and Cinderella's just kind of sitting there like, oh. And I mean, those are a lot of the things
that
we were told.
Also, the guy that wants to be with Cinderella forever requires all the women to show their feet to him.
So he's a weirdo on top of that.
What a fucking weird guy. Really, Cinderella for a foot guy? You would think that would be the, like, oh, wow, dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
Like, if I were Cinderella, my shoe fell off, and I was like, gosh, I really liked him. We were really connecting. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the next week I saw a poster that was like, you got to take your feet out, ladies. I would be like, wow.
Yeah.
I won't be taking my feet out for this guy.
Just throw the other shoe out.
Or throw it in the trash. Well, I guess this lady must not, she must be in the trash. That's so true. Also, when I was a kid, did you have any of those, like, fairy tale books that were, like, the old school fairy tales? Like, the one where the Little Mermaid was supposed to kill the prince?
Yeah,
and then she died and turned into foam?
They were, like, the Grimm's tales vibes of the early
days. Where there was always people getting birds plucking out their eyes.
And their heart. Their heart was always in someone's hand.
Yeah, there was somebody who was holding their guts, and like Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella were like kind of, like some necrophilia implications.
Weird shit that everyone thought was fine.
Normal.
They cut stepsister's toes off, didn't they, in Cinderella?
Yeah. They cut their toes off. It was super gross and metal. Actually, I would listen to those podcast with fairy tales as horror stories because they are all very scary. Yeah. I had one that was about three sisters and one had one eye and one had three eyes and one had two eyes. And
sounds
the one
like
eye
my
and
cats.
The three-eyed one. Yeah. They were mean to the one with two eyes. And it was just like, what
you know?
Is happening? Everybody had lead poisoning back then.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's what needed to be banned.
Seriously. I mean, look, also, I don't think that banning books from libraries is going to have the effect that the people that are its most ardent supporters believe it's going to do. Like, when have adults trying to keep kids from doing something ever actually kept kids from doing things?
And now, I mean, kids can just get on the internet and order whatever they want. They can read whatever they want. It's stupid and short-sighted. And if I'm honest, I feel like there's a larger effort, not to get all serious, to just dumb down our society.
Yes.
Because when you have a dumber population, it's easier to control them. It's easier to make them think that, like, the craziness that Donald Trump is doing is okay and normal. And then people want to feel smart. And so when you feed them nonsense that makes them feel smart, they feel empowered with knowledge. But it's knowledge that's really harmful. And I don't know. It just makes me really, really concerned. Just the attack on intellectualism and just learning. And I think we're going to continue to see some just really harmful effects and sometimes violent and dangerous effects on society.
Yeah. And speaking of when we were talking about excluding people from society, I feel like trans and gay people are in those categories. Like, conservatives in America want to turn America into a mega church, like a forever mega church with like one of those pastors flying on the have you seen those videos on TikTok?
Grifting at the front of the sanctuary like Donald Trump. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I would not want to see him in one of those. Like, there's like videos on TikTok of megachurch pastors with the like Peter Pan harness, so they fly over the whatever. I don't know if that would work for Donald Trump. I feel like maybe
better
he's,
get out of the
he'd
way.
He'd have a wedgie.
Yeah, exactly. Oof, Alyssa.
Sorry.
Horrible.
Okay, I'm ripping over here. I'm feeling loose. I'm feeling loose.
One more thing. This we both saw this.
Yeah.
Kind of being talked about this week. Can you talk about the Women in Tech Conference
how
it went?
Orlando, Florida. Let me set the scene. I feel like Sophia from Golden Girls. Sicily, 1940. Orlando, Florida, earlier this week. The Grace Hopper Celebration is a Women in Tech Jobs Fair. How nice is that, right? Let's try to make Silicon Valley and the tech world look a little bit more like America and let more women and people of color and non-binary tech workers have a chance to see what's out there. Well, you guys, there were some dudes who were like, not so fast, and they crashed the conference. Can you imagine the like WhatsApp, weird Facebook group, like whatever these men are communicating via, being like, yeah, fuck those bitches. We're showing up at their job fair. Like, what?
Women and children last, apparently.
Yep. Forever and always.
Yeah, the photos from that event are just like, guys, read the room.
Get a grip, as my mother would say. Get a grip.
Ugh, that's one of the reasons that people were flooding the men were flooding the conference was I've heard that many tech workers have been laid off over the last like couple years. And if you're not from the U.S. and you need a work visa, people are getting to a point where it's kind of crunch time. Like they got to get out of the U.S. or they got to get another job. And so there is a desperation there, but also like, I'm sorry, man, not an excuse.
Yeah.
I would like that would be an automatic disqualifier for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If somebody showed up to a place that was not for them and shoved their resume in my face and took time that was supposed to be for somebody else, no.
You mean a bully? If a bully showed up and was like, I want you to talk to me and only me right now?
Yeah.
Gross.
I don't want you at my company.
Yeah.
I don't want you at my company.
Oh, I love that new girl boss exclusive. I don't want you at my company. Okay, so there you have it. That's the news for this week. Supersized because we're feeling, you know, super
newsy.
Stick around. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty, a.k.a. Sanny Petty.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across six Southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold, and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th, watch Long Play Series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get to Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty, some announcements for the class. Alyssa, we're big fans of Kariuma around here.
Obviously.
Yeah, they make cool, eco-friendly shoes we basically wear 24/7. I could not find mine today, and it was a crisis. We're excited to be releasing our second collab with them, Kariuma, and Love It or Leave It.
There's just something about fall that makes you want to get new shoes. So why not get ones made with organic cotton canvas, natural rubber, cork, and recycled plastics? It doesn't hurt that they have tiny surfing dogs on them. They come in pink and black and feature a whimsical scene that absolutely will put some pep in your step. Plus, Kariuma plants two trees in the Brazilian rainforest for each pair purchased. Run, don't walk, but not until you get a pair of shoes at crooked.com/store.
So as we mentioned earlier in the show, this week is Banned Book Week, and Crooked is using this time to say, how fucked up is it that we need to have something called Banned Book Week? I totally agree.
You can show your support for authors and librarians by shopping new merch from the Crooked Store. They've got Are You Afraid of the Books tees that are perfect for spooky season, kids tees, and onesies that say, read me a banned book, and newly refreshed Free the Books merch.
Whether you're a bookworm or just someone with a personal hatred for Ron DeSantis, we got you. Now book it over to crooked.com/store to shop. All right, time for Sanny Petty. Alyssa, Sanity Corner or feeling petty this week?
I don't know what you'd call it. Maybe a Sanity Corner. Let me just say, I am enjoying the little snippets coming out of Trump's trial. Like, he's showing up. And I want to say, like, months ago, weeks ago, whatever it was, I was talking to Pfeiffer and we were like, Alyssa, what's the one thing you would do if you were Trump? And I'm like, 100% news conferences before or after I walk in. Like, they're campaign events. It's genius. But you guys, he's literally going to court because he doesn't trust his lawyers. And like, he maybe shouldn't, because this was delicious. He was getting all bent out of shape because he was denied a jury. He's like, this judge doesn't like me and I don't have a jury. Maybe because his lawyers forgot to check the box asking for a jury. I mean, he is what? Like, it is watching every time they pan, like when they do a photo spray or whatever of what's going on in the court. It is like The Office meets Parks and Rec meets an episode of Veep. I mean, Letitia's just sitting there looking like cool as a cucumber. I have set this up. This is playing out exactly as I hoped. Trump is sitting there with the worst posture.
I know.
He's got the worst posture. His hair is overly styled. He's got a full wave going to the side, meaning someone's blowing that shit out with a round brush every single morning before he goes to work. And I just am enjoying it. But the look on the lawyer's face, it was all over social media. It was all over Twitter. It's all over Instagram. The look on the lawyer's face when the judge was like, yeah, it's because your lawyers didn't check the box. She was like, look, I have IBS. I've seen the look. She had the look. She gave us the look. So anyway, that was my enjoyment. The Republicans have really been giving us a lot this week. In general, it's a sanity corner for the ages, the week of October 7th or whatever this is, 3rd, 4th, whatever.
Oh, man. Yeah, I love the trial is just full of colorful characters.
Yeah.
Bad for America, but funny.
Yeah, bad for America, but
but funny.
We've earned these moments of levity.
Yeah. And, you know, a couple months ago, I posed the theoretical or the hypothetical, who would you want to see least coming to your front door? It was like Tish James.
Yeah.
Ronan Farrow.
Also bad.
Yeah. I think Tish is definitely number one at this point. I would not want to see her coming to my, I would be like, I don't know you. What?
That means she already has everything in place and you're going down.
Yeah. She's ready.
Okay, so I have a sort of like sanity corner / I feel petty. It's just such a weird story, and I don't know what draws me to it, but I want to talk about Katy Perry's fight over a $15 million compound and the law that might be named after her because the allegation is that she took advantage of this old man. Okay, so Katy Perry is currently in a legal battle with the family of the founder of 1-800-Flowers.
This is my first time hearing all of this. So I'm very intrigued.
Oh, okay. Sit back.
So basically, Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom, who I like every time I learn they're together, I'm like, what? Oh, that's
every
so
time
weird.
It's like hearing it for the first time.
Yeah, it's like Legolas plus teenage dream, like whipped cream boobs, like that doesn't, it's like, okay. So basically Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom purchased this $15 million Montecito like estate in apparently 2015 or 2020. And, but the family of the guy filed suit to stop the real estate transaction because they said that he is like old and didn't know what he was doing. So they claim, this is from a Jezebel report, it claims that Carl is the guy that sold the property, was not in the right state of mind to sell his new home when he signed the deed over to Perry and Bloom. He'd just gotten back surgery and was on prescription opiates. And he'd also been suffering from some cognitive decline because he had Huntington's disease. And he'd only just bought the house 2 months earlier and planned to live in it forever, according to the family. So they sued Perry and Bloom to stop the deal. And then the couple countersued. The trial began last Thursday, and Katy Perry is expected to testify. Now, there is a new law being proposed called the Katy Perry Act. Quote,
stop.
The Katy Perry Act addresses the risks of elder financial abuse, especially as it relates to property and real estate.
Could you imagine?
It's against her.
But her name is.
Yeah. The Perry Act stands for Protecting Elder Realty for Retirement Years. And it has the backing of 38 bipartisan state and local politicians in California, according to its website. The goal is to keep anyone over the age 70 at least 50 yards. No, I'm just kidding. I'm reading the Jezebel article. So it basically makes a 72-hour grace period for certain real estate transactions where the person can be like, oh, wait, no, like they can claw back and think about it, especially if they're like an older person. So, yeah, it's just like very funny to me. And also, Katy Perry has always seemed like a fine person, like a lovely person. And I liked Teenage Dream, thought it was a really good pop album. But it is really funny that she was like kind of one of the pet pop stars of like the Hillary Clinton campaign. She was like poised to be singing the national anthem at the inauguration. Like there's all of these things were lined up. And then I think in 2016, when everything went sideways, Katy Perry kind of lost her marbles.
That's
right. Didn't she endorse Rick Caruso?
Yes.
Right. For mayor in LA.
Yeah, she did. It seems like a screw got knocked loose and it did not ever get knocked back.
No, she didn't find it.
She didn't find the screw that got knocked loose. So, that is, I don't know. It's just like a fascinating story of Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom trying to steal a mansion from like an
old. I know, it's icky. You don't do things to old people.
No.
Yeah. At the same time, they did kind of have a really charmed existence in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
It's okay to steal from baby boomers. No, it's not. It's not. Don't do it. Shaniqua, are you feeling sanity corner or petty?
I'm feeling really petty. So I've enjoyed all of the drama with McCarthy and Trump and his court case. But we have a black woman in the Senate again. And we haven't had one since Kamala Harris became vice president. And it's just really been overshadowed. I mean, obviously there are people paying attention to it, probably especially Californians who, you know, Dianne Feinstein passed away Was that last week?
I don't know. What's time? Okay. Who knows what time is and how long it takes?
Passed away last week. And so, you know, her seat needed to be filled by Gavin Newsom. And he chose LaFonza Butler, who I guess now we can say previously was running Emily's list. But, you know, she's only the third Black woman to be in the Senate. And that feels really historic. And it just hasn't been at the top of the conversation. We've, you know, it just kind of feels like history doing what it does, where you have men, in this case, two white men, who are just taking up a lot of airtime with their nonsense. And we're not focusing on this historic thing that just happened. And
I feel like the same thing happened with Justice Jackson.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
something happened right after she was sworn into the Supreme, yeah, Court. And it was like, oh, it just sucked,
yeah,
all the oxygen.
Oh, that happened. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. This is not the same at all. But it even made me think about Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff winning their election on January 5th in 2021. Yeah. And it's like, can we enjoy nice things that are historic? Georgia elected a Black man and a Jewish man. And then the next day, crazy people stormed the Capitol, and that just completely got overshadowed. So that's, you know, I'm sick of seeing stuff like this, but I guess I just talked about her. So
I guess every time a good thing happens that, mm-hmm, you're excited about, you should short the stock market. Because yes, the hedge,
good point,
against,
come, good
something's
point,
coming.
Something is coming. Something is always coming, and it's usually like within 3 days, and you're,
no,
like,
yeah,
well, great.
You don't have to wait long.
Well, what are you most excited about with Senator Butler?
I'm just excited to have, and I don't want to reduce her down to representation, but there are no Black women in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And it means that there's like a perspective missing. And I don't mean that she represents the interests and beliefs of all Black women, but to not have anyone in there,
yeah,
you know, that's been hard for me to just kind of see, because a lot of other groups are making progress. Look, the Senate's still not diverse, like point blank period. But to see other groups making progress and having representation and just someone to kind of speak to their issues, it's hard as a Black woman to not see that. And so, again, she doesn't speak for everyone, but I think it's good that she is just there. And seeing the picture of Kamala Harris swearing her in, you know, I'm not someone who will say the world is great and right because we have representation and like there's, you know, moving photo ops, but those things still do matter. And it, you know, was nice to see happen. And I don't mean for this to sound mean, because Senator Feinstein did pass away, but California now has a
two
present
functional
senator.
Yeah. Senators.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, yeah. It, although she is a registered Maryland voter. So
yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that there's, yeah, I have.
She's not perfect.
I have lots of thoughts. I was going to start this with that caveat. It's like, I know people have lots of feelings. And my first thought when I heard that she was selected was, does she even live in California? But
you know,
all that aside,
I think people kind of have accepted how ridiculously disproportionately white men are represented, mm-hmm, on Capitol Hill. They've just like accepted it. And I think if it was actually representative of the whole U.S. population, there'd be like 13 Black senators.
Yeah.
And there'd be like 25 Latino, mm-hmm, senators, and it would be half women.
Yeah.
But it's,
and it's
not,
just not.
It's just not at all.
Yeah.
Well, that is a great sanity corner. And that we're getting close to the end of the show, but we got a listener shout out. Guys, a real marine biologist. A real marine biologist named Liv. Liv writes to us, I was thrilled to hear you talk about marine biologists on this week's episode. I felt so seen. I'm here to tell you that, yes, marine biologist is a real job. And you have at least one loyal listener who is one. Specifically, I work on coral reef conservation and restoration in Florida. Oh, doing the Lord's work.
Thank goodness.
Developing and implementing intervention strategies to help corals survive in the face of climate change. They really are sensitive to extreme heat, so we're finding ways to boost their heat tolerance. This work is more important than ever after this summer's unprecedented marine heat wave. The ocean experienced just as bad record-breaking extreme heat as we saw on land. My colleagues and I spent the summer documenting the mass bleaching and death of so many corals in Florida, which has been completely heartbreaking. Going forward, we need to work harder than ever to make those that remain stronger, and most importantly, to curb emissions and slow climate change to give these important ecosystems a fighting chance. Thanks so much for all you do. Love listening to you ladies every week at work while I conduct my experiments. I love that.
That was wonderful.
I love being the marine biology experimentation soundtrack. Thank you so much for writing, Liv. If you, other listeners besides Liv, although you can email us again, Liv, we love hearing from you. If you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. That email is checked by the production team and me and Alyssa. Mm. So, you know, don't confess things that you only want one of us to know, because we're all going to know. And that's all the time we have for this week's episode. Thank you to Jennifer Siebel Newsom for joining us for the interview. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. Shaniqua, always a pleasure. So Thanks. Glad you're here. Come back again more frequently, please.
Yes, that's a plan.
Thank Great. You. Thank you, because it was really bumming me out. And thanks to you, listeners. There will be more Hysteria next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okulate, Amelia Montooth, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram and Twitter for more original content, host takeovers, and other community events. As Hysteria listeners know, there's a lot going on in the world of reproductive rights and justice. Some states are trying every trick in the book to ban abortion. Others are demonizing trans kids. And just wait until the Supreme Court sets its sights on birth control. Staying on top of this stuff can be exhausting, unless you listen to the incredible podcast called Boom, Lawyered from Rewire News Group. It's hosted by Imani Gandhi and Jessica Mason Piclo, who are two of the top legal journalists in the country. Believe it or not, Jess and Imani make it fun as hell to unscramble the chaos around the courts and your rights. Search for Boom, Lawyered. That's B-O-O-M, Lawyered, in your favorite podcast app to get smart, stay mad, have fun, and fight back.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across six southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold, and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th, watch Long Play Series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries, or listen wherever you get your podcasts.